we say here at Say Smut, everyone deserves to get horny.
It's true.
Everyone deserves, no matter your age or your paranormal status.
You should get down and come.
Yeah, consensually.
Consensually, yeah.
Hello.
Hello, spooky listeners.
Welcome to Say Smut, a literary podcast for readers and non-readers.
Thanks so much for coming by today. That is Sarah, and she, as far as I can tell, loves books.
That's Hope, and she loves me. No, she loves talking.
Well, that's true.
She loves talking to me about books. Each episode, I break down some plots of some pretty wild books to Pope, who has not read them. Mm-hmm. I almost said Pope.
I'm the Pope. To the Pope, we surprise go to the Vatican with our smutty, smutty books, and we explain the plots to him.
Have you seen like the meme where he holds something up and people edit what he's holding?
Yes.
The Pope? And like, we should just say,
usually
like,
it's probably
smut.
Communion, but yeah. We could have him announce every book we cover.
You're the former Catholic. I am the Protestant of this group. So I don't know what the Pope does or does not do.
Well, he may preside over this podcast.
He has blessed our podcast. For those who like don't know how this works, I feel like we need a recap that obviously I go through some smutty books, but I also give you a topic that you're not sure. You have to research it.
Yes.
And you're not sure how it integrates into our book. And I have to say, after a year of doing this, we've been pretty spot on how things integrate. Sometimes we're a little off, but like for the most part, you do proper research. Like I'll give you literally half a sentence of what you should research and you nail it every single time.
Sometimes it's a dead reveal and I just don't realize that the book is going to be about the thing I'm researching in that
like
way.
Doors.
I think Peeps maybe was Peeps like that.
Peeps was
kind of
like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially Doors.
Doors. When I asked you for the history of Doors and you were like, literally, they've just been around.
Yeah,
and I was like, okay.
Okay. Ever since man needed to go from one place to another through a barrier, there's been a door.
There's been a threshold.
Yeah.
We have some great, I think like our spooky episodes are some of my favorite episodes because it's also our season. Uh-huh. You know, this is you and I's favorite season.
We love this season.
And I think we've done some really fun, I think there's always just fun topics around spooky season. So if you guys have not and you're wanting to like catch up on some fun, spicy books, last week we did one about a corn maze, pretty much a sentient corn maze.
A corn daddy.
A corn daddy, if you will. We've done, last year we did one about, what was it, jack-o'-lantern?
Yeah, we did Jack.
Pumpkin spice latte, sexuals.
Pumpkin spice latte. Yep, that was good.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what else.
Would we have done Given to the Ghoul around Halloween?
We did Given to the Ghoul around Halloween. So
Petite Mort.
Yeah, that was a non-ish smutty one. I think we were trying to even it out. But it's got some sexual tension with some vampires, and witches, and New Orleans. And then obviously this season we also did Butcher and Blackbird, which was two serial killers falling in love. So we're gonna just add to the pile today. Yes,
please. I hope so, because my research is Halloween themed, but for a second week in a row Sarah has not put the title of the book at the top of our little document, and I don't know if it's on purpose or not.
I do have to tell you though that I was trying to pull up our social media and then, of course, a real place. I do want to quick step away from Halloween a second.
Okay.
And talk about Christmas.
Wow, or the holiday season.
The winter season, if you will, because I know not all people who listen to us are Christians. So I don't like to be like Christmas because we've got Hanukkah. We've got people who just order takeout Chinese on Christmas Day and say, you know, this is good enough. But I have already started getting books for Christmas.
I am not surprised.
Yeah. So I made a post on our social media of like some of my favorite or most anticipated releases of the year. And today I started on the day it came out, Make the Season Bright by Ashley Herring Blake came out on like October 1st, I think. And I got it on Libby the day it came out. And so I'm listening to that right now. It's got me in like the holiday season. It's queer. It's got two musicians. They're ex-best friends who turned into lovers, who turned into fiancés, and then one of them left them at the altar. And then this is 5 years later, they get stuck together for Christmas. And I'm having so much fun. But I'm also like, okay, Sarah, every time you turn off or pause this audio, you have to come back to spooky season.
That's
you
know? True. It's hard to be in the middle of a jolly holiday romp and then come back to the season of ghouls and spooks and frights and scares.
Another one that I'm excited because I have an arc of, but it technically already came out. I just haven't done the arc yet. So is a Jingle Bell Mingle, which is the third book in a book we've covered, A Merry Little Meet Cute by Julie Murphy and Sierra Simone. They came out. It's a Merry Little Meet Cute we did an episode on last year. Uh-huh. It was the porn star. I shouldn't say porn star. She's like an OnlyFans creator, essentially, and she gets accidentally cast in a Hallmark movie.
Yeah.
And this boy band lead singer who is trying to fix his image also gets cast. Well, he's a subscriber of hers.
Oops.
So there's some bisexual, spicy fun on set and some flavored, I don't want to say flavored, that sounds wrong. Some scented, I think it's gingerbread lotion that he uses on his penis that I'm still worried about his.
I wouldn't put a warming spice down there for sure.
No, for sure, for sure.
For sure, don't do that.
But the third book in the series came out just a couple of weeks ago, so I'm going to be listening to, or reading that. I've also got The Nightmare Before Christmas, which I'm so excited for. It's like my most excited read for this holiday season. And it's Santa's bisexual son.
Ooh.
Okay. And the Prince of Halloween. So technically could be Halloween.
So yeah, look, we can fit it in the in-between period. It's kind of like A Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah. Well, they are fighting for the to be the love of the Princess of Easter or something. Like for like her hand in marriage, anyways, but then they fuck.
Yeah, that good. They find the real love was between them all along.
And the best part is Sarah, I want to say her last name is Roche, is doing a whole series. So there's like another Christmas Sun and the St. Patty's Day prince or something that fall in love. So like there's a whole like holiday royalty falling in love
and
getting horny.
Yeah. So iconic symbols of holidays all sleeping together.
All of them fucking.
Every single one.
A couple other just quick shout outs because I want to, I'm just like in the mood now. The Most Wonderful Crime of the Year by Allie Carter. I have heard that this is not spicy. They only like kiss, but I heard it's excellent. And then The Christmas You Found Me, I think it's a single parent romance. So that'll, I also have a copy of that that I'm about to read. I'm just very excited. There's just so much happening. There's so much going on.
So much going on.
But we're going to come back into the moment.
Yeah. I'm ready. Let's get spooky.
Okay. Do you have any holiday announcements?
I have no holiday announcements. I have been watching Great British Baking Show.
As we all should be doing year round.
It's the season for that specifically, and I'm very excited. That's pretty much all I've got going on.
Well, let's get, I was going to try and make some pun here, but I'm not as good at those as you are. But we are going to get baked. No, that didn't work.
We could.
We could. Not my brand as much, but you absolutely could. somebody could.
Someone could.
Someone who's listening, get baked and listen to our retelling of Riding the Headless Horseman by Molly Lickovich.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm. You could see why I couldn't quite put that in. It gives too much away. Sometimes these titles give too much away. Yeah.
I understand. I mean, I hoped that since I was supposed to research the Headless Horseman, that perhaps that would be a love interest within this story. But I couldn't be sure until you said the title.
So I will tell you I have mixed feelings about this. There are things that I absolutely love about this book, and there are things that I'm like, we could have done more. Because it's a 50-page book. And I just think I think we could have gotten more. And maybe my expectations are irrational because we have so many monster smut books that are extremely detailed, whereas this is like a human body, so I really can't work off of anything crazy.
That's true.
But content warnings. Obviously, there is sexual content, but this does include dom-sub dynamics. There is death. There is decapitation, obviously. There's kidnapping. I'm going to mention a previous relationship that was toxic, but I'm not going to really talk about it. And there is murder. And death. I think that goes with murder, but I mean, in case you did not know. So StoryGraph, it has a 3.41 and Goodreads has a 3.46. So very middle of the road, very mid, as the kids say these days.
That's like consistent. It's a very consistent result.
Yeah. So I'm going to read Molly's bio from her website. Molly is a best-selling author, poet, and video essayist.
Ooh.
I wonder where they post her video essays.
We got to see that content.
Yeah. She is the mastermind behind titles such as Riding the Headless Horseman, Send in the Clowns, and There's Something in the Woods, as well as the indie docuseries Hidden History and Her Story, like H-E-R story.
Yeah. No, you don't have to tell me about Her Story. Mm-hmm.
We all support Her Story here.
I'm living it every day.
We'll see what happens this November if we're going to make Her Story. She was or has worked with world-renowned historians, scholars, and many other online creators and writers. She's a Beetlejuice aficionado, gothic leading lady, and future ghost. I love that, you know, lineup. Beetlejuice aficionado, gothic leading lady, and future ghost.
Future ghost.
Are you ready to dive in?
I hope to have my business resolved is what I was going to say, to not be a future ghost, but no promises.
Yeah, no, for sure. I would rather not be in some like purgatory middle ground.
But if I end up being a ghost, it's okay.
Yeah, no. Someday, I don't know if I've ever told you about my time interviewing a medium, a psychic medium. Did I ever tell you about that?
I would love for you to do it right now.
The long and short of it is just that I was working in a small town at a small town newspaper, and there was a person who confided in me that she knew somebody who was a psychic medium and didn't like talking about it, and was like, she would be very interesting for you to interview. And I was like, if she's not going to talk about it, I don't know if she will. She was a cook at a restaurant. It wasn't like it wasn't something that was broadcast. But she, after a few conversations, she allowed me to interview her. And it was so interesting because she's actually Catholic. So she is religious and believes that God gives people like her their abilities to bring humans among the earth comfort after times of passing. But one of the most interesting things, because she worked at this very historic restaurant that was like in this really old building. And she says, you know, there are ghosts and poltergeists and all these things. But she says, every single day at the same time, this man will appear and he will walk down the restaurant. It's almost like a big hall. He'll like walk down the restaurant and disappear. And then at the same time every day, he will walk from the other end of the restaurant out the front door and disappear. Every single day she sees him. She's tried to engage with him. And she says, I've figured that these are kind of like replays. He's always wearing like a blue collar, like workman's outfit. And so what that building used to be would have fit that attire. Sure. And so she's like, I think it's just such a strong memory or a strong presence for that individual that passed, that it's almost, and he comes like at 8 a.m., leaves at 5 p.m., like, you know, like the times you would be coming and going from work. And she's like, so I think people leave their memories behind in certain energies. And I thought that was the most interesting thing took away. Because like sometimes I think people interact with things or maybe see things that they're like, I don't know what that was. But like maybe it's just like an energy of a memory, right, that stays in that space.
That's very cool.
So, anyway, her and I she knew things that she shouldn't have known and that are not anywhere public. It was kind of a wild situation.
But that's very fun.
Yeah, no, it was very cool. And then we actually got to go walk through a historic home together. And she said that my great grandma was following us the whole way. And then that night I had a crazy dream about my great grandma. So who knows?
Who could say?
But I'm going to dive us into another ghostly figure.
Yeah. Let's ride this headless horseman.
Yeah. Do you have any folklore around your hometown that people believe in, or anything like superstitious in the areas you
live? I don't think Eldridge has that kind of lore. I think this isn't lore. This is just a true fact, is that well after I had, left for college and then graduated from college and was working at a news station, there was an article through the Associated Press that I think an old cemetery or burial ground had been found under a park in Eldridge. But that wasn't like lore. That's just like a thing that we found underneath the park. But yeah, otherwise, no, not really.
That's actually insane. I'm going to look that up later. But mine, we had like, I think every area has like a devil's bridge concept of like, there's a bridge that a lot of deaths have maybe happened at. And
they probably have stuff like that.
Yeah. If you drive your car onto that bridge and turn off, in the middle of the night and you turn off your car, and then there's going to be handprints and whatever. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So we had something like that. And then at college in Ames, there was a bunch of lore in all of the dorms. You know what I mean?
I think we had at least a ghost in one of the UNI dorms.
Yeah, there's plenty. Recall. One of the dorms of Friley at Iowa State University is the third largest or oldest dorm in the country. Because it used to be a factory, I think. No one fact check me, please. Just go with the story. So the whole thing, though, was that there was this building was there before the university was even there. Mm-hmm. And then they changed it into dorms. And it is freaky. There's like staircases leading to only one floor. And then there's like certain doors that have been permanently blocked off. And like room 101 has allegedly been like firmly shut because like the devil's in there. Oh. And like all these students had these reports of some crazy shit happening, which I would have to say, I'm going to say it. I know we're not into our book yet and we're like 15 minutes into the episode.
Unimportant. We're on a tear here.
We are on a tangent here that's important, which is that if poltergeists are real, mm-hmm. and you have hundreds of students living in a dorm, mm-hmm. And all of that energy around an extremely stressful place in your life, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. how do you not expect there to be poltergeists or crazy energy things happening? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. There's like a lot of energy to feed off of.
Yes.
High-stress dorm
and mixing and like people who don't know each other living with each other and dynamics happening. I don't know. The whole thing is just wacko to me. There was one floor. My building didn't have anything crazy, crazy, but like there was one floor in a building across from mine that they didn't have any mirrors on the second floor because they removed them all. Well, you can see where the mirrors stood. Mm-hmm. And they had to remove them because there were so many reports of people seeing people in the mirrors that were not there. And it turns out that there were football players that lived on that floor who died in a car accident back in early mid 1900s. I don't know the specific decade, but it was a very long time ago. And they died before a football game. Anyway, they lived on that floor. And so people would see these football players in their gear on that floor. Anyway.
Spooky.
We should just do an entire episode of ghost stories because I feel like
spooky stories.
I have so many. Now, we're going to get to our main character, Arletta Harrington, who lives in Sleepy Hollow, where people believe that death is a person, or more specifically, a headless horseman. She does not specifically believe this folklore, which is a really interesting dynamic because she is a witch.
Huh. And interesting.
So if you're going to believe or not believe in like folklore, paranormal beings, I think it's interesting. You might be asking, what kind of witch? Yes, she's a real witch, but she does like do some of the more commercialized corny stuff. And I don't mean corny in a bad way, but like the more traditional, like, here, you can pay me and I'll read your tarot cards. Sure. Because she's like, why not turn a profit on this shit? But she's like, sometimes I just kind of read the energy of the person coming into my shop to see like, are you just wanting like some like crystal ball, like fun stuff? Or are you wanting like the deep, deep witchery?
Sure.
And
the answer is yes, deep witchery every
day. Yeah, I hope if I walked into a shop with a witch, she was like, That's my girl.
Yeah, we're about to bust this wide open. It's gonna be
I'm gonna get some crazy incense out. We're gonna start chanting some shit. So she is doing, we open on her Hallows Eve, of course.
Obviously.
And she's doing some tarot card readings. And the current woman she's working with is a woman named Samantha, in which she pulled some cards that Samantha is obviously trying to read to her own intentions. Because I feel like every tarot card reading, you're like, okay, but does that mean he's my soulmate?
Right. So that means
is that a good thing?
That means they like me, right?
Yeah, that means we're going to be together forever.
And I'm rich.
I should put a down payment on a venue for the wedding.
Yes.
So this is irrelevant until later. Just write Samantha down. Okay.
Okay. Just, I'm going to just write Samantha down.
That's all you need to know. Okay. So when she's done, she closes up the shop and then she starts working on her real witchy stuff. Because we find out her grandmother, who is also a witch, she was very close to her, but Arletta never really had any close friends or family because, of course, we have to make our main female character an extreme loner.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Obviously. You can't be a cool witch with friends. You have to be a cool witch by yourself. We all know that.
Look, witches work better in covens. We all know it. We should work as a team. Okay.
They don't want us working as a coven. That's for sure.
They hate witches working in covens. They want us to be working against each other, divided. This is a time where
I hate it.
We as witches should be united.
I agree.
This point in history. But she is a big loner. And I also think that this is interesting because, again, she's making a profit off of these townspeople. And apparently they judge her really harshly. And I'm like,
why do they? How are you making so much money off of these people? I don't know. People must be really dumb.
No, for sure. So she's walking out. She decides to go for a walk in the woods, of course, on Hallows Eve.
It's fine when you're a witch.
What would you wear if you were a witch on Hallows Eve and you were deciding to go for a little walk?
Some very witchy, maybe pointed at the end boots, some black and white striped tights, sort of like a black raggedy skirt.
Ooh.
Just like lots of layers, lots of materials draped. Long sleeves because it got to be warm.
Yeah.
It's all black.
No, it's for sure all black. Also, she is in a white nightgown, like that's kind of thin, like a long white nightgown. We're giving gothic, okay?
Yeah.
We're giving, what's the movie that I just watched? Oh, gosh. Crimson Peak.
Interesting.
Do you ever see Crimson Peak?
No.
It's got everyone's boyfriend, Tom Hiddleston, in it. And it's got Jessica Chastain and another gal. You should watch it. You'd actually really love it. Energy's great. But it's very like walking with a candelabra in a like, you know, gothic white nightgown like our girl is in this book. Anyway, you're looking it up. I can tell. So we are in the middle of the woods. She's got like a little cardigan on. Mm-hmm. And she's like, yeah, I should have brought maybe a coat.
You don't say.
And so she's just walking around and she realizes there's something in her pocket, you know?
Uh-huh.
And she pulls it out and it's a tarot card, the tarot card of death.
Da-da-da.
And she looks up and across the bridge in front of her, there's a shadow. And a voice comes and says, quote, come to me. And this is where I think my brain switched and went to Phantom of the Opera. And I was like, come to me.
Yeah. And they started singing a song together.
Yeah. And then Angel of Music.
Uh-huh,
and then, yeah. And then, you know, that we've got the frilly neckline of, uh-huh, of our ghost and whatnot. Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. It's just very fitting. We'll get into it more later. So this is a bit of a dual POV book, which means we switch points of view for the main characters. And we do get a couple of chapters from Death's quote unquote POV. We'll give him a name later. Cool. But it now switches to him, in which he says, quote, she runs from me. They all run from me, but I could smell the witching on her from miles away. And then he just goes on to talk about how beautiful her soul felt and he needed to have it.
I love when we have like known spooky creatures as a main character. And then when they encounter a human person and the human person is scared, they're like disappointed and, they always run away.
I didn't think you were going to react that way.
It's just me, Death.
So she just decides to run for her life, as she should. And she's running through these woods with her dramatic, you know, nightgown flowing around her, and hooves are clattering behind her. And in a sudden movement, she gets swept up and thrown onto the horse sideways in front of his body. Cause we're going to talk about this because, okay, you're riding on a horse. Uh-huh. You pick up a girl. Okay. Yeah. You just scoop her up and you throw her over. So like, I think her midsection, how like her tummy's laying down on the saddle, you know what I mean? Like sure. She's like bent over the saddle.
Sure.
And then he's like, okay, well, we got to get her on here properly. And so he gets her. And again, if she's in front of you, so you're pretty close up to the neck. Uh-huh. You get her leg swung over. I just think that's not going to quite work exactly how you think it's going to work without her falling off.
I think what you have to do, and this isn't great strategy either, is you have to pick her up and then try and hold her up high enough that you can at least get one leg over the horse. And then you can set her down and she'll be ready to go.
And imagine bending down. I don't know how tall this horse is. We'll get into the horse in near the end of the book. But the horse has got to be pretty tall. So to lean down enough that you're grabbing her waist enough to pull her over is insane.
Yeah.
That is wild. So he speaks to her. And his voice kind of feels like it's coming around her in the vicinity, right?
Very normal, not threatening.
Not threatening. And it's kind of hard to describe. I don't feel like we really did it justice in the book. But, you know, it's kind of like I imagine when somebody has like a speaker system on and you like talk through the speaker system and it's like, whoa, where did that come from? The voice of God.
Surround sound. It's just kind of a surround sound situation.
But only in the vicinity.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like booming through the woods. We wouldn't want everybody to know we're kidnapping somebody.
Yeah.
She's trying to free herself. And he says, quote, "Stop moving, little mortal. I do not wish to punish you. Just obey me." So you can already tell those dom dynamic. I tried to shorten dynams.
Those dom dams.
Dom dams are really coming in. So while she's on the horse, she can feel him behind her. Quote, "He may not be endowed with a head, but he clearly makes up for it in other departments. Out of all the things I would have guessed, this malevolent presence that evidently has been plaguing our town for centuries would want to do with me, getting it on would have been very low on the list," end quote.
That's fair. Mm-hmm. But maybe you shouldn't judge a book by its cover. Maybe you know, should assume Death's here to kill people. Maybe he wants to bone.
We say here at Say Smut, everyone deserves to get horny.
It's true.
Everyone deserves, no matter your age or your paranormal status.
You should get down and clown.
Yeah, consensually.
Consensually, yeah.
They ride this horse into another dimension of sorts, which she guesses that they're in like some hell domain. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like some bone bridge they passed. And then now they're in some entrance to a cave home thing. They get off the horse and he like carries her into this cave, which is actually super grand. It's got like a massive foyer. Now I'm getting real Phantom of the Opera vibes.
Sure. Yeah. It's giving underground layer underneath the theater. Mm-hmm. We have to take a boat to get there.
Yeah. We're singing extremely high notes and there's lots of candelabras around.
So it's a real fire hazard.
Yeah, for sure. So he carries her in and, this is his description at this point that we get.
Okay, I'm ready.
Quote, "An 8-foot tall man, clad all in black, muscles so big that his clothes stretch taut across his body, and nothing but that goddamn pumpkin on his shoulders." So he's a human man. Well, I shouldn't say human at this point, but he's a man.
Right. Yeah.
And he's just 8 feet tall.
The body of an 8-foot tall human man.
Yeah, you know,
the head of a pumpkin.
I imagine, you know, he died and he went to like death and he was like, death was like, "Hey, do you want to work for me?" Because he's also going to explain that he is not death. He just works for death because he's a harbinger of death.
Sure.
So he says, you know, "Hey, do you want to work for me?" And he's like, "Yeah, but like, you know, I'm a short king."
Yeah, but I could be taller.
"I really think you could make me taller." And then he goes bibbity bobbity boop and all of a sudden he's 8 feet tall and he was like, "Well, you kind of overdid it now. Like, I mean, I wanted to be taller, but maybe not this tall."
It's a little much, but I'll take it.
By the way, he only needs the head when he's in the earthly realm to see. And now that they're in this hell realm, uh-huh. he doesn't need it.
He can take the pumpkin right off.
Yeah, so he takes it off like it's a coat. He's yeah. just like, oh, welcome home, honey. Yeah. She asks if he is Death, and he's like, nah, I just work for him. But actually, he doesn't say him. He says them, which is giving very non-binary vibes. Mm-hmm. And we love that because mm-hmm. Death, God, we don't have to put genders to them.
Don't have to.
Mm-mm. She asks, meanwhile, Mr. Headless Man is like toying with her and like clearly wanting this like dom sub dynamic and keeps asking her to give in. You should just give in. Just obey. And he pulls the bodice of her nightgown down. So her boobs, titties just out.
Oh, titties okay. out. Well, there they are.
And he's playing with her nipples, trying her to give her, get her to give in, to obey. And she's like, well, what should I even call you? And he says, master. And she's like, absolutely not. She was like,
I don't know you.
I don't think so. And he gives this really weird lecture for like a page about how freeing it would be to obey him due to the hateful town she lives in where no one appreciates her. And she's a beautiful witch and has beautiful witch skills that she peddles for profit. It's a really weird dynamic of a speech.
Aren't you tired of being bullied? Wouldn't you rather be fucked instead?
Yeah. Which, yes, I would. But
certainly, but.
But I'm really unsure why you had to read me like that. It's a little unnecessary. And it's funny because then she says, quote, I remain seated, tits out, before the headless horseman. Weirdest Halloween yet, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. Like, she's like, she just has these moments of clarity where she's like,
Look, of all the Halloweens, I certainly haven't spent one tits out in front of the headless horseman before. So
it's never too late.
It's never too late. You always can and you always should if you want to.
So he says that she should get undressed. And she's like, can you even see me if I got undressed? And he's like, quote, I can see your beauty because I feel it. It radiates off your louder than your magic.
So he can feel it through echolocation.
Yeah, I imagine it's bat signals now. It's I'm still not quite sure how this works. That's why I have mixed feelings about this, because I'm like, we've done enough of these monster books where it's like there's been detailed explanations of how things work for no reason. And now I'm like, I need a detailed explanation of how he sees her.
Well, he's like super hot and sexy. And when they fuck, he makes clicking noises. And when the sound reverberates off of her, he'll know her exact form and where she is. I think it's pretty straightforward, Sarah. Yeah, exactly.
That's so funny. Okay. So she gets undressed and he fingers her and she gets off. Okay.
Great.
Great. And after she comes down from her orgasm, she's immediately like, tell me the story. And he's like, how long do you want? And she was like, well, don't give me like the Odyssey, but like, don't give me some weird analogy of how you came to be. Like, give me a good middle ground. So at this time, Hope.
Yes.
Will you tell us the story of the Headless Horseman?
Yes, this is going to be very interesting. Sarah asked me to research the Headless Horseman, which I did. Unfortunately, I'm
which I didn't actually.
I just said no, thank you, and that's the end of my research. I am a little tired from work this week, so I don't have a good title for this research, and all I could really think of was that horseman's given no head. I don't know. It's not there. It's fine.
Only one head on this horseman.
And it's not the one on penis. Top. You have to really explain
Sorry.
It.
Sorry. I really thought that would read, but it didn't.
So close. So when Sarah asked me to research the Headless Horseman, for some reason it rung a bell. It was like tickled a memory in my brain. And I realized that very briefly I had to touch on the Headless Horseman and the Legend of Sleepy Hollow while I was doing research.
So.
Yes, for Jack, when we were doing Jack by Leila Faye. So a little over a year ago. I was researching jack-o'-lanterns, and jack-o'-lanterns began popping up in early American literature. The Legend of Sleepy Hollow sort of became a catalyst for bringing pumpkins and jack-o'-lanterns into American culture, is where this came into the research. So I had just mentioned that Washington Irving published The Legend of Sleepy Hollow in 1820 and then republished it in 1858. And that was like the bit of it.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was like, it's great that explains to me how Americans were introduced to pumpkins and jack-o'-lanterns, but what is the legend of Sleepy Hollow? And like, what is the origin of the headless horseman? So the first thing I did is what any serious investigative journalist would do, is I fired up my Disney Plus and watched the 1946 classic Ichabod and Mr. Toad. Did I need to do that? No. Did I watch the whole thing anyway? Yes.
No, that sounds delightful.
The Ichabod Crane part is narrated entirely by Bing Crosby. So like,
wow.
And I'm not going to say that it helped me. It goes through the story, but it was mostly a fun thing I did. And afterwards I did my real research. But let's get to what the story is first. So most people who are familiar with a headless horseman are familiar with the headless horseman, which comes from the legend of Sleepy Hollow. And in this story, it revolves around a schoolmaster named Ichabod Crane who comes to town and is a schoolmaster. And in the Disney movie version, like, sort of, there's a whole song where they're like, he's kind of weird, but also kind of not. And we all like him, even if he's a little weird. And he sort of womanizes the people of the town, mostly it seems like, so that he can eat food, because he doesn't make a lot of money as a schoolmaster. Very interesting stuff.
And that's on our economy.
Yes. Yeah. That's a greater discussion about the prices of goods in
And we should pay our school teachers.
And we should pay the schoolmaster more so that he doesn't have to, specifically in this movie, stay friends with shitty students so that the parents still like him and bring him over and feed him.
Oh,
so,
no, I don't like that.
But he like has enough charm to kind of charm ladies in the town. And while he's in Sleepy Hollow, he encounters the daughter of a wealthy farmer, and her name is Katrina Van Tassel, and everyone loves her because she's beautiful. And her dad is very rich because he's got this big, huge farm. So all of the men love her, including like the fun pranking hottie of Sleepy Hollow. His name is Brom Bones. So part of the story is that Brom and Ichabod both like Katrina and are like both trying to kind of court her and like, I don't know, date her and be with her. They go to Katrina's farm where her dad is having a big, fun, spooky Halloween party. This is where everybody gets around and tells ghost stories. And one of them is about the titular headless horseman, who is said to be, they didn't go into this much detail in the movie. I'm not sure if they do in the book because I haven't read that, but in like the general explainer of the legend of Sleepy Hollow, the horseman is like a horseman for the British in the Revolutionary War. And he lost his head by a cannon and was buried in a churchyard in Sleepy Hollow and goes around and like tries to find a new head and or his old head is like basically that story. Oh. So the ghost story gets told at the party that they're all at. And then also Ichabod Crane kind of gets rebuffed by Katrina. And so he leaves the party. I guess they're not going to date or get married or whatever. Oh. And while he's leaving, he starts to get chased by an actual headless horseman. It's like dark. He's riding on a horse in a forest. He sees a big shadowy figure on a horse. There's like a little back and forth that's like, everything is spooky and scary. It's the headless horseman. But underneath it, like, is it just Brom messing with him? Maybe. Yeah, who knows? But true. Then, oh no, the headless horseman throws a pumpkin at Ichabod, who is thrown from his horse and then never seen again.
Wait, who threw the pumpkin?
The headless horseman throws the pumpkin.
Did he throw his own head or the pumpkin that he's carrying?
Yeah, he didn't have like backup pumpkins. Okay, which he threw at Ichabod.
You kind of got one shot then.
Yeah, so one opportunity to seize everything you ever wanted. Yeah. In this case, Ichabod Crane's head. But then Ichabod gets thrown from his horse and no one ever sees him again. And the town's like, oh, what happened to him? Did he get caught by the headless horseman? Did he just leave town? Ooh. So that's like the legend of Sleepy Hollow story that contains the headless horseman.
Hold on, can I chime in quick?
Yes, always.
Once upon a time I was in high school and we did a play of like Sleepy Hollow.
Oh, nice.
And all these memories are coming back to me of being in this play. I was just an extra. I did not matter. But
you were the pumpkin they threw at Ichabod.
I vaguely remember being a part of a scene that sang a song about Ichabod Crane. So this could be the same exact song.
It would be that really, you're talking about. Watch it and then report.
Yeah, back. I should. And then you're talking about the party at the dad's house. And mm-hmm. I knew I was in this play, but I don't really remember because I was an extra. So I didn't have to go to all the practices or anything. Sure. So I remember being at that quote unquote party. And then I also remember the scene where he runs from, because we did this whole thing in our auditorium for it. Anyway, so you're just bringing me back. You're bringing me back with your storytelling. Thank you.
Yes. Well, I'm so happy that we could remember these fun memes. Well, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow is considered one of the first American ghost stories, just by the general public. It's certainly not the first instance of a headless ghost type man astride a horse at all. Okay. And there have been lots of examples of this throughout all kinds of history. So I have tons of sources, and I'll go through mine quick at the end. But one of them, which was sciencehudson.org, noted that spooky stories of headless spirits have existed long before Sleepy Hollow can even go back to the Middle Ages. So it wasn't like this book came out and it was the first time anybody had ever heard of a headless horseman. Many believe that Irving was inspired by a German poem called The Wild Huntsman, which is about a hunter who's doomed to be chased by a huntsman and hellhounds for his misdeeds and for being a bad person.
Okay, I've heard of that one, yeah.
Yep. Thanks to a Mental Floss article titled Six Terrifying Tales of Headless Horsemen by Jane Alexander, I have a handful of examples of horse boys, sans heads, in stories from across the world that I'd love to share with you. I believe all of which pretty much all of these are older than Sleepy Hollow would be.
Remind me the date on Sleepy Hollow-ish.
Sleepy Hollow was published in 1820.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that's not... okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not all of these will have exact dates, but they'll at least have times and regions. So older than Ichabod Crane, for example.
Okay.
Would be... there is a spooky Irish horseman called the Doolahan. I think that's how that's pronounced. There's a lot of things I'm probably about to pronounce wrong, and for that, I'm blanketly very sorry. Mm-hmm. But this horseman was believed to be the embodiment of a Celtic god who is called Black Crom. And Black Crom was worshipped by a prehistoric king in Ireland. And it was said that this king would offer up human sacrifices to the god for fertility purposes and often via beheading. But eventually in Ireland, Christianity kind of came in favor. And so Celtic gods kind of fell out of favor. But this Black Crom character kind of persisted as the Doolahan. Or the Doolahan, excuse me. So this is depicted as a headless dude on a spooky horse. Mm. And he's holding his head. And he haunts the place and is an omen of doom and badness. Mm-hmm. So that's one. Scotland has a similar legend as well. This is the legend of Ewan the Littlehead. So the son of a clan chief.
The Littlehead.
Yeah. The son of a clan chief who lost his head in battle on horseback in 1538. Apparently the horse kept running with the rest of the person on their back until they became very tired. And it is said that the headless ghost haunts the path on horseback to this day. Mm-hmm. For centuries in Germany, there are a few stories of headless riders. I don't even know I'm so sorry for my pronunciation of these. Hans Jagentufel and Der Klopfwasserreiten. And it's just lots of headless horse people. There's the Headless Horseman of Devon from England, and even a different American one, which I had not ever heard of before. But in southern Texas, there is El Muerto del Rodeo, which is a rider who apparently was caught hustling, and he lost his head. And then his head was tied to a horse and set loose as a warning to other riders for nondescript hustling. I don't have any more details, but there are academic papers dating back to 1848 talking about that story. So all of that to say, headless, we just sort of have a culture of headless horse persons.
In your research, do you feel like a lot of them came from Western Europe and predominantly that area?
Yes.
Okay, well, I just wanted to make sure white people weren't stealing culture from other people too.
Yes. In fact, I remember several details of Sleepy Hollow as being Dutch specifically.
Oh,
Dutch and German. And,
oh, my people.
People. We've got Irish in here. We've got all kinds of stuff.
You know who almost made the list, but unfortunately could not?
Who?
Nearly Headless Nick.
Oh,
he's
that's
only
true.
Nearly headless, you know, so he can't. The man was like, oh, so close.
Honorable so mention. Close. I wish I could talk to you about Nearly Headless Nick in my research, but I can't because he doesn't qualify.
He doesn't qualify.
But thank you for listening to my research. That's pretty much it. I'd like to thank Mental Floss. We've got the Celtic Ranch. We've got History.com. We've got I watched The Adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad on Disney Plus. Yes. We read BBC News, The Horror of the Headless Horseman, and Reed Sparling's Why the Headless Horseman Lives On from Scenic Hudson.
I am so excited. Thank you so much for telling me that, because I'm about to tell you a completely different story.
I can't wait. I can't wait to see to compares and also contrasts.
Well, when I was reading this, when he tells a story, which is very short, and I was excited because I was hoping you would elaborate on this story, but it is clear that this is not the story that
maybe
you have.
I'll remember something I didn't include in my report.
No, I can't imagine you do so well with your research. So all he says is that he arrived in America in 1790 from Hesse, Germany. Uh-huh. She clarifies that she doesn't know, like, need like a massive backstory, like she said. So, like, just give me the bare bones.
Sure.
And he was like, yeah, I was accused of witchcraft, even though I wasn't a witch, and I was hanged. And back then, they would chop off the witches' heads to make sure Satan didn't rise them from the dead. Raise them from the dead. So, like, which I've heard of that concept before, but, like, I was kind of like, you're a man. Mm. And from everything I know from this story so far, you're a white man. Mm. You wouldn't be accused of witchcraft back then. Sorry,
I don't know that you'd be accused of witchcraft. Hard to say.
Mm. Mm. So that's why I find it interesting that most of your stories have to do with, like, war or, like, battle, you know, that led to the person being headless.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy was like...
But I suppose... Obviously, there's room for a different story of a headless person who became headless in this way as well.
I mean,
and maybe
course,
I just didn't read about it.
Of course, there's that option.
Of course, there's that option.
So he says that he didn't move on into the afterlife because he wanted to punish those who wronged him. And then he then just stuck around after that because evil never truly dies. So he stayed. He says, quote, I can see darkness in your soul. But because he was talking about like the evil and the darkness mm-hmm. in the world. Mm-hmm. He says, quote, I can see darkness in your soul, but it's not yours. Someone put it there, end quote. And Arletta talks about how she had an ex who was not very good to her. And so she's like, yeah, somebody else did put that darkness in me.
I like to believe that he isn't referring to heartbreak from a past relationship.
He's actually,
like, you're literally cursed.
I think you are.
There is a dark energy around your
There's
heart.
Another witch after you, my girl.
This isn't Brian's fault.
No.
This is a hex.
I think his name is Ethan. This isn't Ethan's
this
fault.
This is not Ethan's fault.
So he starts fingering her again, as you do after you trauma bond.
Very normal transition.
And all Arletta can think about is wanting to kiss him. But obviously there's no head. So now she's...
I feel bad because I forgot. I forgot that he wasn't wearing his head. And so I was like, there's already been fingering multiple times. Why are you shy about kissing this person?
Yeah. Well, you guys have gone through some steps already.
No, it's because there's no head. I'm silly.
She also, like, doesn't know where to look because there's nothing to look at.
That's fair.
So she's now fully immersed into the master, obeying and everything
took
and
little time.
She has another fingering orgasm. Okay. So then he's amazing. Like, let's go to bed. And he takes her up to his amazing bedroom, which, by the way, if you've ever seen Phantom of the Opera, he has like this amazing like peacock looking bed.
Absolutely and, huge.
Oh, I love it. I just imagine that's the bed they go to. Anyway, so he gets undressed and he's got like this shadowy quality to his skin, but he's still solid, but he's almost like ethereal, you know? So it's got that like weird ghosty idea to it.
Uh-huh.
So of course he's got the biggest penis ever.
I mean, obviously.
Unfortunately, we don't get any more description than that he has the biggest penis ever. And like I said, it's probably because he's still human shaped. He's just 8 feet tall.
So, and the tallest man that's ever lived.
Yes. Unlike the Taylor Swift song,
the smallest man. that's Ethan. We've talked about
that. Yeah, that's Ethan. So she immediately is like, I don't think I've got to worry about birth control. And I'll note now that there's no reference. And again, maybe this is just because we've done so much monster smut that I'm like, what is this ejaculation like? And it's like, he's literally a ghost. He doesn't have ejaculation. So we never talk about there's no ejaculation commentary.
No.
It's just a poof. It's just like a poof.
That's what I choose to believe.
So they end up having a little bit of a rough version of like missionary style. Mm-hmm. Then they decide to go take a bath in what sounds to be like the most massive pool I've ever heard of. And he's like bathing her and saying how he doesn't remember his name, which I find very weird that because he does remember the town, his hometown name.
Fascinating.
But he doesn't remember his selective own memory. Name. So he's like, what do you want to call me? And she's like, I'll call you Hess after your hometown.
You know, Hess, where you're from.
Yeah, Hess. So there are these very fun floating candles, very Harry Potter style, around mm-hmm. the room. And he grabs one and does a little wax play, which is very fun. That's,
I think, new to the pod.
I don't think we've done wax play yet. I don't think
we've had wax play in a book.
Unless we did in Jack. Did we have wax? I don't think we did.
Not that I immediately remember, but there was a lot that happened in that book that would have overshadowed, I think, wax play.
If we were to parallel this book with another book, we did have another witch who did tarot cards and shit and then accidentally summoned a demon in a jack-o'-lantern. So this is not too far off of how we started this book, too. So, I mean, like, if we were going to have wax play, I would also say that it's probably in that book, too. But this might be a first. And so, anyway, they head back to the bedroom and do some doggy style with her hands on the headboard and some rope tying her up. Mm. And then he, like, flips her over again before doing some missionary again. I'll say that the wax is fun. The spanking and stuff were fun. But, like, it's just a lot of, like, missionary and stuff that I'm like, sure. I don't understand. I don't know.
More inventive in this.
Yeah, I really felt like, the smut wasn't as detailed and as fun as some of our other books that we've done. And again, it's so hard because I don't want to compare them to each other. But when we've had kind of a steady flow of smut and descriptions and craziness, like,
right. The bar is admittedly fairly high for us.
Yeah. I mean, you did give 100% to our last book, which was a podcast first.
And I said what I said.
And look, I stand behind you. So she, when they're done, she finally says, like, I really wish I could kiss you. And he's like, I guess I just look like I did when I died. So I guess I just don't have my head. And she was like, well, what if you had your skull? And he was like, well, I can only go out during Hallows Eve. And I'm typically working for death when I do that. So there's not much time on the clock to go and like research where my head might be. Mm-hmm. So they fall asleep and she ends up waking up before he does. And she sneaks out and she
flies
runs
to Hess, Germany.
Fly. Well, no, he died. He died here.
He came
from Germany to the United States.
Okay. I thought he lost it in Germany.
No, he lost it here. Okay. So she's sneaking out and she runs into the horse and surprise, the horse can talk.
That's very exciting.
And it's very similar to how Hess talks. He doesn't like move his lips. It's just like a voice. Uh-huh. An ever-loving voice from
a
above.
A voice that floats out of the gap between the horse's lips.
Yeah. And she's like, hey, can you take me back? And the horse is like, yeah, but master won't be happy. And she's like, I know, but I've got things to do. And horse was like, okay.
I've got a skull to find so that I can give it sweet smooches.
Yeah. She was like, he's like, okay, but I don't think you're coming back. And she's like, I promise I'll come back. Well, obviously, she can't come back that night because he can only come to and fro during this one night. Right. And the night is now up. So she goes back and Hess is obviously sad that she left him. And he's like, maybe next year I'll take her back dead or alive.
That's funny because if someone left me and then it was going to be a whole year and we were just not going to contact each other, I don't think my first instinct would be, I'm sure this will work out again.
I'm sure we'll meet again. Things are going to move very fast because
buckled up.
The next series of events happens over the course of like 3 to 4 pages. Okay. 6 months later, she's hanging out with her new best friend, Samantha. Yes, Samantha from the tarot card.
I did write down in my notes, Samantha, in quotes with an arrow, just to note that I had written it down as you recorded.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. So apparently that night during Halloween, she came home and Samantha was like waiting at her house and was like, you a witch? I'm a witch. I think we're both witches. And I think that tarot card reading I had earlier today was more for you than it was for me. And she's like, actually, you're right. Anyway, doesn't matter. They're besties now. Arletta has been doing a bunch of research and now they found a place where they believe that the remains are of these witches who got decapitated.
Sure.
And they're going to dig them up because if you've been best friends for 6 months, what better way to commemorate your friendship
solidify that friendship by digging up a skull.
Digging a skull. And she is like hopeful that she will find his remains because of what he was wearing on Hallow's Eve. She hopes that it's the same clothes that she'll find his body in. And even though this could be a mass grave, she somehow magically finds his body and because it's wearing the clothes and a skull
even though
nearby.
Clothes looked very the same back then.
Yeah. And again, if this was they don't really address the fact that if this is a mass grave, because they talk about it. They said, what if this is a mass grave and there's a bunch of skulls and there's a bunch of heads? Like, how do you know which head is his? We just don't really address why or how she figured out which one was his.
I bet she could just tell.
But also, what if she picked up the wrong head and then, like, it's just, like, the wrong head with the wrong body for the rest of his immortal life?
I don't know. I wonder if that would change anything about his personality.
Yes.
Or if it would just be him and have to wear this different head. Because it could be that he'd still just be himself. And that's because the headless horseman is looking for a new head.
Well, I mean, you could at this point.
It doesn't have to be his head.
That's so true. And also, could just like Walmart shop that. Something you wanted.
Okay, now hear me out.
Okay.
I don't condone violence or murder.
No.
However.
But.
You could pick your favorite head.
Oh, yeah.
Lop it right off.
She could find her favorite head
for
him.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, no, that's incredible. Okay, put a pin in this because it'll come back in about 3 seconds. Okay. So, will you quickly tell me how long does it take for bone to deteriorate? Because as I'm sitting here and I'm like, okay, it was 1790. Is his clothes and his skull like still intact? Everything good?
The answer is it depends. It takes time for bone to decompose, depending, and like the amount of time is very dependent on things like, well, you know, the condition of the bone, probably its size, what condition it was left in, the environment. So many different things can factor it that I let Google AI take the wheel for me on this one.
Okay, no, fair, because
I think that's fair.
It was a quick question I wanted.
So don't even worry about it. So here's where we're at. The time range for bone decomposition is anywhere between like several years, as in like six, to upwards of hundreds of years.
Okay.
If bones are in a coffin, it can take decades just for the body around the bones to decay, and then hundreds of years on top of that for the bone to decay, because it's all sealed up in a box. So you're just kind of left to the natural decompositional devices that you got going on. If bones are not in a coffin, it depends on things like the acidity of the soil, the temperature, the humidity, the bone's exposure to air, and whether the bones are exposed to water, and whether or not animals and bugs are eating the bones or not. Per my researching, and I'll have some mixed sources for this, it could take around 20 years for skeletons to dissolve in fertile, acidic soil, but if it's more neutral, then it can take hundreds of years, and if it's in a drier environment, your bones can fossilize and turn into minerals. So it depends. Depends on where this witch man was decapitated and where his skull landed. Way, way before Sarah asked me to research this years ago, I listened to a really awesome episode of the podcast Criminal titled All the Time in the World. And the episode is about this place colloquially called the Body Farm at Texas State University.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And essentially is a place where people can donate their bodies to science, and they can specifically donate it to this place, and they will take the donor bodies and essentially bury them or place them in various conditions, generally outdoors, and then observe how they decompose in those conditions so that they can help investigators who come across the remains of a human being identify maybe how long they had been there or how they died based on the way it has decomposed. It's a really awesome episode of a podcast. I recommend it if you're into that kind of thing, Phoebe Judge Rules. So you should listen to that episode of Criminal. If you're like me and you found that really fascinating, and if you found it spooky, don't. But
don't. That's all you need to know, and then that's you all can you move need on with your life.
So TLDR, some 6 years to hundreds of years. Thank you to Google AI that sourced Wikipedia and PubMed and Scientific America and Good Life, Good Death, Good Grief, and Vedantu. Who could know what that website is? But they apparently had a great source of information.
That is so interesting to me, mm-hmm. because
so his skull could be there, I guess, is the long and short of it.
It could, but if it's so exposed to the elements and stuff, like it's a risky bet.
Mm-hmm. It really is, depending on like the pH levels of the soil.
Because you've got about 230 some years. Yeah.
But if it's very, very dry, then we could have had like a fossil situation.
If you guys really liked what Hope just talked about, you should definitely look into bogs, because those are fascinating to me. And they are like essentially this form of like water, this area of water that can like mummify bodies. And so they've found bodies in bogs before that are hundreds, if not thousands of years old. And they are like pristine condition. Like you're like, how did that? So anyway,
what I'm saying is, if someone accuses you of being a ghost and you are found guilty and they have to behead you, which normally they do because them's the rules, if you could ask them to do it over a bog, there's a pretty good chance that your head will just be kind of preserved as is. And then when you are a headless horseman and the woman you're going to, I don't know, be in love with, I'm guessing, needs to find your head so that she can give it nice smooches, it will be perfectly intact. It might even still have like your full face on it because of the... Like that's the goal is to be a bog.
You also
do it in a bog, do it in a very dry place and maybe be a fossil.
You did mention that if you're found guilty of being a ghost, I think you meant
if you're found guilty of being a witch.
Yeah. Cause for a moment I was like, yeah, totally. I totally get that.
Guilty
no, for sure.
Being a ghost.
No. Yeah, sure. For sure. Mm-hmm.
Definitely Hope.
Okay. So now we move forward again, 6 months, and it is now a year from that Halloween. She somehow makes it to his mysterious cave house on her own. Not sure how she got the directions. Pretty sure it's not on Google Maps.
Where's the talking horse is my question.
Well, I'm so glad you asked. She goes to walk in and the horse is outside and it's like, hey, you're back. And she's like, yeah, I am. And he's like, I didn't think you were going to come back because mortals lie. And she was like, no, because I want to be with him. And she's like, yeah, I'll talk to you later. And he's like, talk to you later, Arletta. And then she just like walks inside.
A very normal TTYL with a horse that I have.
BRB. So she walks in and the horse was like, yeah, I'll talk to you later. And sorry, I was looking at the wrong bullet point. So she walks in and Hess is sitting in his bath, like this big old bath of his, and he's got his back to her. And she gets his attention by saying, master. And he turns around. He gets all tense and he turns around. And she has this scarf in her hands and she unwraps the scarf and it's his skull. And she says, I want to kiss you. And he says, you left me. Now I'm imagining like a telenovela.
Okay? Yeah, it's you very left dramatic. Me. They are not looking at each other. They're looking beyond each other. Yes. Different camera angles.
And she's like, I know. I'm sorry. I went to. And then he finishes to get this. And she's like, yes. And she and he's like, will you, like, he essentially asks her if she'll stay forever. And she's like, I promise. And then he puts the skull on his shoulders and it's no longer a skull. It like warps into his head where he has beautiful blue eyes, like the ocean on a clear summer day, and fiery red hair full of curls that fall into his face. And, he's no longer got this weird distorted voice. It's now his like true voice with his thick German accent. And he says, I love you. And they kiss and they go to his bed and she rides him cowgirl style. Thankfully, nice. Because that's the name of our fucking book.
Yeah. We finally ride the finally. Headless horseman. And something that hasn't really happened yet.
That's why I kept mentioning the positions, because it was like missionary, finger. He actually even goes down on her now. And she's like, I surely like him better with a head on. And then she finishes the book by saying, I love you too. And that's the end of our book. So to your point of like picking and choosing ahead, she's like, you know what? I got beautiful blue eyes. I got chiseled jaw. I got gorgeous red hair. I've got It's so cute. But, you know, I've got a lot of questions, like the longevity of their relationship, because she, yes, she's a witch, but she's still probably going to have a mortal life. So is he going to just give up his job with death after she dies and like move on with her? Is she going to like die and be with him? I don't know. I feel like that's all left up in the air. I wish we would have gotten an epilogue.
That's true. But then think of the possibilities. Since we don't know concretely, we can imagine whatever we want.
That's so true. Mm-hmm. How do you feel after that?
I feel so good. And I drew a picture of what I think Hess looks like. And it's this.
I love
it's hard to get it all in one because on account of he's so tall.
No, for sure.
And all
for
the
sure.
shading is because he's got a big bulge.
No, he's I see the huge massive bulge there.
It's important because it was very important in the story.
We will put it on social media. I should make a highlight of your drawings for sure. Okay, let's discuss diversity. We made death non-binary, which I think is excellent.
True.
Other than that, we really didn't get much from it. Than an 8 foot tall man. That's all we got.
It's diverse in its tall.
Yeah. It's diverse and tall, and they finally did it cowgirl style.
And wax play. It was diverse in the play.
No, but like, and in the core, I mean, we got a witch, we got a ghost. But like, if we're talking about like race, sexual identity.
Yeah, not
much else. But I'll give it for giving us a non-binary death. So, plot. I felt like the plot was a Hail Mary at the end to get his head. It was the last 10 pages. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we really didn't have a plot. So I'm going to give the plot, oh God, what do I want to do? A 2.5.
Oh, I'll give it a 3.
Wow, you're so much more forgiving than I am.
It included a talking horse, which is really good for me personally.
We just threw in the talking horse. Okay. Okay. So Smut, I'm going to give it a 3.
I'm going to go 3.5 because there was a lot of, not a lot of variety, but like it seemed like they had several encounters, which was nice. And
yeah, as somebody who read it, I will tell you, like, it wasn't very descriptive.
Oh, well,
so
you described it so great that I gave it a 3.5.
That's so nice of you. Okay, do you want to take a look at our cover, which is,
yes,
I have to say, it is one of my favorite covers. For, ooh, that's, for an indie author,
big talk.
It is so cute to me. I think it's so cute.
My window browser is so zoomed in. The anticipation is killing me. Why are you 400%? Oh, that's so cute. Okay, so at the very top, it says, Sleepy Hollow has never been sexier. And it says, Riding the Headless Horseman. Great. The image is illustrated. So you've got, I see now. So it's the Headless Horseman. He's got his lit jack-o'-lantern pumpkin head in his hand. He's on a horse. You can see part of the horse, not all of it. Very dark horse. And he's leaning over because he's picking up our main character off the ground to get her on the horse, like in the scene.
Yeah.
He picks her up off the ground. And she's wearing a very long, old-timey little like nightgown, and her boobs are huge, and it's very dramatic, and there's a big moon, and it's nighttime, and it's by Molly, and I love it. It's really cute for an indie author. That's such good. How did you find it? Did you do it yourself?
It's like it's like kind of cartoony done, like it's like obviously drawn, but it is so cute. I think I don't know. I think it's like such the mood of the book. I really couldn't have asked for anything more. So I'm giving the cover a 5.
What do you think? I'm going to give it a 4.5. I really like it. I think even if this was just like an image that you could find or generate, it's probably one of the first times that an indie publisher has had something that's like showing what's actively happening in like showing a scene in the book and not just showing characters or things that represent the characters standing by each other. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's actually portraying events of the book. And I love that.
So that turns out with me having 70% and you having a 73%. Nice. What is your 6 month moment? I mean, I want to go with the talking horse because it just really felt out of left field.
It made me really happy. So I don't think I was like, what was what? I think I was like, finally.
Finally, a talking horse, what we
my
all deserve.
My kind of entertainment. What is my... I think it's... Honestly, and this isn't even really something that we talked about, but it is a reaction that I had in my head. My mm-hmm. say smut is the fact that the headless horseman was just like kind of completely fine when she came back and had his head and wasn't like, you were a full year has passed.
I actually moved on. I found another victim.
That I kind of like, I expected there to be a little bit more tension because he was asleep when she left, right?
Yeah.
She just open left.
Yeah.
I would be a little more upset.
Back with the head. She found the head.
I think
you gotta forgive.
Maybe the head makes it easy for him to forgive. As his best friend, the talking horse, I'm assuming they're best friends, I would have done a little more stick up for my friend and been like, so a year has passed. Where you?
Yeah, so bitch, where you been?
It's crazy that you think you can just walk in here and have it be fine.
She can't come back any earlier. Like, he can only come out on Hallows Eve. So it's kind of like, that's the next time I get to see you. It's
just the issue was a lack of communication.
She could have told him, too.
You needed to tell him that you were doing that.
That's fair. That's really fair.
Just be clear. That's awesome. That's for me.
I think the positive say smut was obviously we had a little BDSM with a mm-hmm. little rope. We had a little dom sub. We had some wax play. I thought it was very fun. I did like our little combo from our side of could you just pick a head and trade out a head for whatever you wanted.
Yeah, I thought that was very innovative, and it seems like it would have worked.
Yeah, let's do a spin-off where she collects the heads and just picks whatever one she wants. Out. Yeah. Any other say smut moments?
No, that really was it for me. I didn't think it was. This sounds silly because we are talking about a book where we sleep with the headless horseman, but it didn't really have that much like shock and awe in the say smut kind of way to me.
Yeah, well, it's
very practical for how your love with a headless horseman would go, I guess.
I do want to tell, because we did have a lot of questions about the follow-up. There is a novella which is crazy to say because this is already a 50-page book. There is a 1.5 book called Smashing Pumpkins. Okay, and this is the description. Arletta is keeping secrets. The god of death doesn't like that a living witch is residing in the realm of spirits alongside the headless horseman. In order to maintain his power, Hess must make the ultimate sacrifice. Meanwhile, Arletta is searching for answers about her past, as well as the past of the man she loves. So this is this is the epilogue, I guess, that we wanted.
Wow, that and sounds like an entirely follow-up book. That sounds like this is a series of books.
So I can't wait to tell you that there's a book two, okay? So Arletta Harrington is gone, but her legend lives on. Whoa. Samantha has been miserable since her best friend and only friend Arletta, because we have to also make sure she has no friends, disappeared into the mist several years ago to join her lover, the headless horseman himself. Coping with depression and lifelong trauma, Samantha decides she no longer wants to live. Wow.
Oh, jeez.
Sorry, you guys. I should have trigger warned this because I did not. I'm just finding this. But just before she's about to throw herself from Sleepy Hollow's clock tower. I'm so sorry, you guys.
It just keeps
this just gets worse.
It just gets worse and worse as time goes on.
A mysterious voice stops her. Al is a demon that's invisible to the living world. That is, until he meets Samantha. Samantha can see him, and she's not amused by his over-the-top and uncouth attitude. Al decides haunting Samantha will be a very entertaining endeavor. I'm sorry, he's like, this woman's super depressed and is having clearly some severe issues. We should just make her the victim of my hauntings. And then it goes on to pretty much say that they're gonna have a whole story. So it sounds like a very fun series. I don't know. That book came out. I should see when that came out. The second book. I think it's fairly recent. So maybe there's even going to be more. That was September of this year. So there could be even more. I will
literally
say
last month.
Yeah. I will say the art of this doesn't match the art of our book, which always throws me off. Like, I want all the art to look exactly the same if it's in the same series, but that's fine. It's just a personal complaint. Anyway, You can follow us, if you so choose, on Instagram or TikTok at Say Smut Podcast. We have stuff to even do another giveaway. We just did a giveaway. In a couple of weeks, we'll do another giveaway, maybe for the end of spooky season and the holiday season. Maybe we'll pick a nice holiday book.
Oh, nice holiday book. Who could say?
Who could say? But follow us, join us along for our adventures on social media. And if you have suggestions for books, we have had a couple of recommendations sent to us. We are not ignoring them. We are strategically planning them.
We are slotting them into a schedule.
We are putting them into a schedule. So if you sent us suggestions, please do not be weary. We are taking them seriously. If you have suggestions, though, send them to our email at saysmutpodcast@gmail.com. And, you know, pop us a rating or review. Please rate us based on our podcasting skills, not how we rate these books.
No.
don't judge us based on plot and smut and cover.
Judge us by our personalities.
Just on our headless personalities. Anyway, so rate us on whatever podcast platform you are listening. In the meantime, we ask you to stay smutty.
Yeah, stay smutty, and please tell your headless horseman that you're leaving before you leave for a full year. It's just basic communication, you guys.
Don't lose your heads, you guys. Come on.
Don't lose them.
Don't lose your heads and stay smutty. Bye.
Bye-bye.